This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Williams here. Pete Zimmerman's your producer. John Beaver is the president of Phase 3 Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm and registered principal with Royal Alliance Associates, a return guest for us. John, thanks for joining us again. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How about yourself today?
Well, thanks for asking. I'm good. I know that there are some changes to IRAs and IRA withdrawals, and we'll get to that in a minute. Which it would seem to me to be very near and dear subject to many people. But you think there's something maybe even a little more important that we don't fully appreciate, and that is not only what's happening with Federal Reserve policy, but something called balance sheet runoff. What are you talking about there?
A balance sheet runoff, that's where the Federal Reserve starts taking money back out of the system. See, the Federal Reserve is the one who actually puts money into the system. When we talk about inflating, the Fed has actually said, we don't print, and that's true because they don't print. It's the Department of Treasury that prints, and the Department of Treasury has said, well, we're not inflating, and that's right. They don't because they don't put the money into circulation. It's actually the Fed that does this. So the balance sheet is one of the ways that they get money into the system, and they do that by buying bonds from financial institutions. And when they buy bonds, they're really trading a bond for money. So then they're giving cash to that financial institution, and then there's various ways that then that finds its way into the economy. Well, right now we're sitting with a balance sheet of about $9 trillion.
What does that mean?
The runoff is where they start taking that money back.
Yeah, $9 trillion. You paused dramatically. That's a large number.
It's a very large number, and it's one of the reasons why we're experiencing the inflation that we have. So the balance sheet runoff, that's a technical thing, but it has great implications because putting the money into the system, increasing their balance sheet, can be inflationary if they don't get that back fast enough. When they start to take that money back, it can actually then affect the stock market and the bond market.
Did the Fed wait too long to raise interest rates?
In my opinion, they did. In my opinion, they're quite a bit behind the curve. I would have liked to see them start last year. In fact, I think they should have continued with some action all the way back to 2016 when they were attempting to run off the balance sheet, and they got a little spooked by the markets and stopped.
Why didn't they? I mean, would we have been critical of them for being too proactive at the time? What would be the downside to that?
I don't know the motivation. I do think that they were very concerned about going back into another recession. We were coming off the heels of the Great Recession. Those depressions, Great Recessions, the effects of those can linger for years and years, and they didn't want to make the same mistake that the Fed made back in the Great Depression. And so they were hesitant to take the money back too quickly.
And is the only firewall to a recession or to inflation the Fed?
No, they're part of it. They're probably a very large part when they start making such dramatic moves. So when they pushed interest rates as low as they did, that was a dramatic move, taking rates to zero for such an extended period of time. And building their balance sheet up to $9 trillion is also an extremely dramatic move. That's where you start to have that influence from the Fed. Little tweaking around the edges doesn't do much.
Well, it just seems to me like so much of it, the ball is so thoroughly in their court. And one wonders how many tools they have. They can raise interest rates. What else can they or can anybody do about this?
Yeah, the ball is in the Fed's court. Now, the markets will have their way, too. If the Fed is really out of whack, the market will start to indicate that. So interest rates might move outside of what the Federal Reserve controls. They control the short-term interest rates, but they don't really control the long-term interest rates. They influence those long-term interest rates by their purchases of bonds or their sale of bonds, which is really that balance sheet that we're talking about. But the market has been signaling to the Fed that they're behind the curve.
So what's your forecast, John? How do you think this is going to play out?
I think it's going to play out with the Fed increasing interest rates quite dramatically. You know, there's been indication both from the Fed and in the futures market that we're all expecting half a point increases this year, looking at maybe 2 to 2.5% on the short-term rates by the end of the year, 3% next year. We do expect this to continue to pressure stocks and bonds. It'll have effect on both until we get through this process of raising the rates, and then things will settle back down again. What the Fed is looking for is what's called the terminal rate, and that's where short-term interest rates equal the inflation rate. So inflation at 8.5%, which we found out this week, that has to come down short-term interest rates right now, sub 1%, need to go up, and somewhere they'll meet. Probably not in the middle, maybe a little bit below the middle. We're guessing maybe 3.5%.
I've heard people talk about that, 8.5%. Do you think that's as high as it gets?
No, we could actually see it print of maybe 10% this year, but this is not persistent. In fact, it's interesting. Talking about the 1950s and 60s from a different perspective, it has to do with what happens with interest rates and inflation. Kind of a similar situation coming off of World War II, where there were these supply chain disruptions and we had a shortage in the housing market and we had inflation that really popped up high. But eventually it settled back down again in the early 60s to a lower level, but was on a general increase then through the 60s and 70s. I think we're looking at the same situation. We've got a high print right now in inflation, could go a little bit higher for the next couple of months, but then we'll probably come down quite dramatically, bounce around for several years, but we're probably on a long-term trajectory to the upside for perhaps a couple decades.
Wow. That's a good thing or a bad thing or a neutral thing?
It's a good thing as long as the Fed can keep that inflation rate sub 3%. But there's a whole other issue here, and that is the government debt. You're talking $30 trillion. So $30 trillion, they can't let interest rates go very high. Otherwise, the interest on the national debt will be eating up the budget. So they're between a rock and a hard place where they're trying to fight inflation, but they don't want the interest rates to go too high. If they keep the rates too low, inflation really heats up, and that creates a problem. And so it's a tough balancing act that they have before them at this point in time. I don't see how they get out of this without some kind of a policy error.
Also makes you wonder about all the money that we've given away in the last 2 years, which in hindsight may in fact have been the right thing to do. But boy, we just keep piling it on, don't we?
I think it was the right thing to do at the beginning. I mean, when everything came to a screeching halt, I applaud them for how quickly they moved. But I think they went too far too long.
That's 12:15. Stay right there, John Beaver. Let's head into the WGN Radio Newsroom first, though. We normally update you on markets. I've at least got the forecast for you, right, Bob? 12:20 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. WGN Radio News at 12:30, 1 hour from then. Speed Jokes, the replay. We're talking to John Beaver on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And, John, we also wanted to talk a little bit about the change in IRA withdrawals. It's a bill that the both two houses have passed in the Congress. The president hasn't signed it yet. What would be different if he does?
Well, if he does, it's going to be a delay on when you have to take that money out of your IRA. So they've already extended it from age 70 and a half to 72. And now this bill proposes extending that to age 75. Now, it's going to take a couple of years for them to get to that point. But that's actually some relief for taxpayers, especially those that want to have a little bit more flexibility or those that may still be working at age 72 or 73. So that's one big change, and that would affect a lot of people. And it may be partly due to the change that was made to beneficiary IRAs. So if you inherit an IRA from someone, you now have to empty that thing within 10 years. And so imagine a lot of this is happening to people that might be in their 60s and 70s. They're inheriting these IRAs from their parents. They got a double whammy. They got to take the money out of the one from their parents over 10 years, and then they have to empty their own also. So that may be part of what's gone into the thinking on this.
The president signs that, but can you just expand on that a little bit more? So does it change the timeline on withdrawals?
Yeah, so a couple of things here. So the president signs it, and it's then effective, but it's not going to happen this year. Like I said, it's going to take a couple years for them to wrap it up. So right now, the withdrawal age is still the required minimum age. When you have to take money out of your IRA, you have to start taking withdrawals. That's starting at age 72. And then they'll, a couple years later, raise it to 73 and then 74. And then by the time we hit 2030, it's going to be age 75. So it's going to take a couple years to get to that point. But this required minimum distribution, think about it this way. The IRS wants you to empty your IRA over your lifetime. None of us knows what our lifetime is. We know an average life expectancy, so the IRS uses what's called a life expectancy table. Now, those tables were also recently adjusted. Those tables were adjusted just now in 2022. So the life expectancy tables have stretched out the period of time that people can take money out of their IRA. expecting life expectancy to increase. They've seen this over many years, perhaps not the last couple of years due to COVID, but there's been this increase in life expectancy over the last decade. So you have to start taking money out of your IRA. You have to take it out over your lifetime. That's calculated by a life expectancy table. And they're just saying, you know what, we're going to give you a little relief. You don't have to start at age 70 and a half. You don't have to start at age 72. A couple of years down the road, we'll let you start at age 75.
Okay, that's an accommodation. It sounds like a good idea, especially given the fact that people tend to live longer, but it doesn't keep you from withdrawing sooner if you, for whatever reason, want to or need to, right?
Right. So once you're age 59 and a half, you can start taking withdrawals out of your IRA penalty-free. In fact, you can even tap it before age 59 and a half using certain rules.
Are you interested in the Elon Musk story? We talked about that with the guest in the last hour. What's your wisdom about that and the impact on markets or anything else?
I find it curious. I don't think there's going to be much impact on the markets. And really, you know, this thing is, it's going to go one of two ways. Either there's going to be a tender offer to the public shareholders, just directly to the shareholders, or it's going to go to the board and they'll vote on a merger. You know, who knows where this is going to go. The real question is, what is Elon Musk thinking? And I'm not sure any of us really know. I think he knows. I mean, he's a very smart person. But he's one of those guys that thinks about the things that we haven't thought about. You know, who ever thought about having reusable rockets? I mean, the conventional wisdom was forget it. So not even sure exactly what he's thinking. We're trying to figure that out. It does seem like it's along the lines of something along the lines of free speech. But we'll see. So I think it's more entertainment and theater at this point in time, except, of course, for the shareholders of Twitter.
What happens to them?
Well, Twitter's been in the tank. It's not been the greatest stock. The company hasn't figured out how to actually monetize what they have there. It's a very interesting
platform. They lost money last year. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So for the shareholders, I'm sure there's some shareholders who were happy to see the price jump. And, we saw indication that some shareholders were jumping out at that price, just happy to get out. Others see this as a buying opportunity. They think that this is going to get turned around and that there's going to be some type of capitalization of the cash flow, increasing the cash flow. It's too hard to figure out because there's too many variables that come into play with this, and it's really not a platform that is generating the revenue that everybody anticipates it could generate.
It is interesting to me, any of the platforms, TikTok, Facebook for that matter. I mean, I guess we all understand how Facebook makes money, but do we really? I don't pay for it. The ads aren't so pervasive that, you know, you go, oh, well, that's how they're doing it. And Twitter, I think the revenue stream is even more invisible. How do any of these platforms make money?
It's all about the information. It really is. It's who can get the majority of the information, who can get the cleanest information.
That is user information. Who am I? What are my likes? What is my address? Content like that.
Yes, and it's even beyond the individual. It's also to trends and larger social issues.
So corporations pay these websites. Boy, I sound naive here, don't I? But corporations pay these platforms fees to get the information that they give them?
As part of the revenue stream, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, more about that down the road then, I guess. Any last words of wisdom for you before I let you go today, John?
This is tax weekend, so don't forget to do your taxes. Got to drop it in the mail if you're going to do it by mail or make any payments by Monday, April 18th.
Somewhere my friend Terry Savage is screaming at the radio, don't do it by mail. File electronically.
Right.
File electronically. Okay, John, it's nice to talk to you. John Beaver, president of Phase 3 Advisory Services. Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
WGN Radio News comes your way next.